Monday, May 9th, hearing room 343, 3 o'clock p.m., tape number 117, work session on Senate Bill 237, Senator L.B. Day's amendments.
Senate Committee on Environment and Energy will come to order. Today we are having a work session on 237, and in conjunction with that, Senator Day has a small set of housekeeping amendments to the bill, and 87 pictures, I believe, and we'll have him kind of run through those a little bit for us. Okay.
Well, I appreciate that, Mr. Chairman, and I will. I have a group of people I've been working with that will come up here in a few minutes, okay. But I took the trouble to go through House Bill 2295, which has been reported out of committee as of Friday afternoon, and I also met with Stafford Hansel after that, and we went through the bill together. The basic differences in 2295 and the amendments you see before you are these, and I just list them for you, and then I'll take you through the bill with this panel. First of all, the area of periodic review. Currently, in periodic review, we automatically force a state LCDC review. Under the amendments that that I have, what it would say is that if for example, LCDC is satisfied and all the people who worked at public level are satisfied, and there's just no interest in going through the procedure, you don't have to. In other words, if there's no question that everything's in good order, just to have a proceeding, because that's what periodic review calls for at the state level, it won't be necessary if that's the case. So that's one difference.
Doesn't 2295 have a discretionary periodic review?
I don't think it does, but I could be corrected.
Well, it did at one time. Yeah. Oh, I'm back to it.
All right, I don't think it does now, okay. And my only point is that I think that's I don't know why we'd want to force that to happen if it's not necessary. So that is a difference. The second change is when you talk about substantial compliance. I personally don't. You're either in compliance or you're not. I mean, I don't think you'd be a little bit pregnant or a little bit there. You either have achieved it or you haven't achieved it. And I think there can be some mischief by continually talking about substantial compliance. So I don't agree with that concept, so that is not in this. I do believe in a land use court, and that's probably two-thirds of the amendments you have there deal with the court in order to achieve it. There is concern expressed on the court that if they're elected, that somehow it can be politicized and a particular interest group could influence the election. I think one way to avoid that, if you wanted to, this is set up very much like the tax court now, but one way is to assign this, make this assignment to the Court of Appeals and then have the presiding judge assign new judges on a yearly basis or something of that nature. You could still preserve the election process, and I don't think it would do any great harm, and I haven't noticed many judges from the Court of Appeals been losing their elections over some land use decision, though they've been making some pretty tough land use decisions over the last 8 years. My amendment strictly set up a land use court, similar to the tax court. It does not do that at this time, but that's one area that you'll hear about. Now the major difference is an exceptions process that's built into this, and of course this is in sections 33 and on, about four sections there that we can touch. The real position here is, under the Hansel report, they were suggesting that we amend certain goals, that the agriculture goals should be amended, or that there should be some adjustments in a particular goal. After reviewing that, I really believe it would be better, instead of amending the goals, is to allow on a finding that if they can show through some procedure that we lay out statutorily that an exception should be granted, that there is strong evidence to the fact that it is to the betterment of the area and the community, that the exception of that particular goal or goals could be made, then I think that would be my approach on a case-by-case basis. I'm concerned about the marginal land approach from the standpoint that we paint a large picture. It doesn't necessarily mean that someone's going to get through the hoop, or that they will, or maybe too many will get through the hoop based on just one large stroke. I'd rather have them go before the Planning Commission, and particularly in rural lands, go before the Planning Commission and the county court and prove their point. So that's a difference. The other major difference is that irrespective of what exceptions process we allow, I would have no subdivisions in the FU land, period. None. Zip. Now those really are the major, there are other nuances I'm sure we can find, but those are the major things I could find that my amendments differ from House Bill 2295. Now, before the rest of you came in, the chairman and I were talking a little bit. If House Bill 2295 is assigned to this committee, I'm very comfortable in waiting to pursue these amendments with 2295. I just am, if it's come here. I will tell you, I've been a little concerned because the changes or some bill getting to us, because even with the vote Friday, we won't see that bill much before the 15th or 16th of May, and so I don't think we have a lot of time, and that's one of the reasons I want to be prepared to talk what we can do on a total package. I am by no means married to any one of these, but I do think the exceptions process and a review of that is far preferable than the approach under 237. Now, that's just my notion, and that's why I've been a little bit concerned of moving on one and not addressing the whole land use reform. So those are the major differences, and frankly, if 237 is just held in committee until we see what happens to 2295, if it gets here, I don't have too much interest in 237, but I don't have an objection because I will spend my energies under 2295 to try to get something out. And, of course, it makes it a lot easier if we amend 2295. It means merely a concurrence in the Senate amendments on the House floor, and it's a lot faster process than sending a Senate bill and having to start all over again. So those are my views, and that would be what my suggestions are, and then I'll be glad to take you through the bill. But if that makes some sense, that's what I'd suggest the rest of us.
Yeah, that I think we were talking about it earlier. I would like to have you do go through the bill, particularly
sure.
The exceptions process.
Sure.
That's the one that's really pertinent to 237,
sure.
And then I'd like to attempt to amend 237 to the point that we're going to amend it and then not take final action about sending it out of the committee until we physically have the other bill in our
You plan. Want to move these now that we have a quorum and get it done?
Move these
amendments to 237?
I don't want to move them.
I meant these.
Oh, I thought we were doing that.
No, I could.
The chairman is set up once
again. Didn't paint the way you did.
I was all set.
Yeah, I know. I saw Starship, but you're getting ready to move there.
No, I'm saying.
What I need to do is Todd's got a markup so that people can see what they're doing. So I'm going to wait. He's going to be here in a few minutes. So why don't you go ahead and start going through here.
Well, you've had pretty well a review, and I'm going to ask a few people to come up to the table who I've been working with. I've been working with the Association of Oregon Counties, League of Oregon Cities, and Association of Oregon Industries, and the home builders, and if they would come up, I would appreciate it very much because they're prepared to go through this with you. And I thought we'd just take it. The review that I've handed to you gives you kind of a overall review, but I think we can take it through each phase of it section by section. And okay, the stage is yours. Fly away. We'll start with section one and work us all the way through it.
I think in terms of an overview.
You want to give your name for the record, all of you, so we know who's talking.
President Adam with the
Gordon Foltz, Association of Oregon Counties.
Marion, Associated Oregon Industries.
I think the overview has been very well spelled out in terms of the principal differences between this bill and the House bill. There are a variety of, when you look at the exceptions, or when you look at a specific periodic review process, for example, in the House bill and here, you'll see some specific differences. And as you look at the sections on local government permit processing, broad concept, they're the same. The words are a little bit different in various places. In some cases, this bill may be superior to the House bill. In other cases, the House bill is probably superior to this bill in those technicalities. I think the broad concept, this bill has the exceptions process, the land use court, and no subdivisions in EFU that the House bill does not have. This bill doesn't include reference to substantial compliance or partial acknowledgement. The House bill has substantial compliance and partial acknowledgement, and then there's probably a greater difference in the handling of periodic review. The other place where there's a fairly significant difference is in the handling of periodic review. I understand the House is rewriting their periodic review process, and the language, I don't think we've seen the language on it. That's a quick overview. We will go through this bill section by section if you care, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
You'd like us to go through it section by section?
Start out with this. Section 1 essentially is very similar to a provision that you'll find in House Bill 2295. It clarifies the director's power. I want to speak to the director. Of course, I'm talking about the director of the Department of Land Conservation and Development to participate in certain land use appeals as one of the general powers granted to the director. One of the differences that I believe will carry over from the amendments you have before you to the House bill is that these amendments do include a requirement that the director report to the commission regarding each case in which they are becoming involved and the positions that they are taking in each case. So a commission oversight or overview of the policies and issues that are being put forth on a regular basis. Section 2 of the amendments amend the existing provisions concerning state agency coordination. Under current law, we have a system where the state agencies are required to submit what we call programs of coordination to LCDC, showing that their agency rules and programs are in compliance with the goals and are consistent with the acknowledged comprehensive plans of all the various jurisdictions. There's been some recent court activity regarding those provisions, those requirements that state agencies take actions that are in compliance with the goals. And there have been state agency permit decisions, individual permit decisions, that have been being reviewed both in LUBA for compliance with the goals and at the same time in the Court of Appeals for compliance with other specific statutes that agency is required to deal with. And there have been inconsistent decisions out of LUBA and the Court of Appeals. There's a suggestion in these amendments to deal with that situation that would specify that state agencies take actions in compliance with the goals and consistent with the plans until their state agency programs of coordination are certified by LCDC. Once those programs of coordination are certified by LCDC as being in compliance with the goals, as being sufficient, then those state agency actions would have to be taken in compliance with that state agency's own program of coordination. In other words, what the state agency said they would do to make sure that the goals are carried out and that comprehensive plans are complied with, that they would do. So that would be a change in that section. In regard to Section 3, I think Gordon could suggest this.
As you probably are aware, there's been a lot of interest in the coastal goals and the problems counties and cities have experienced in dealing with those. This is a suggestion, rather than trying to come up with a solution, to direct LCDC to review the coastal goals towards simplifying and consolidating those goals and report to the 85 legislature. That's all it is. There's nothing that requires them to make changes, but it does require them to take a look and review those. Section 4 is a little different than the deadline section that's in House Bill 2295. I think probably most of you are aware that the dates that were set were submission of plans by January 1st, 84, and acknowledgement of those plans by July 1st, 84. The House version has had an automatic enforcement order and withdrawal or holding of state-shared revenues of a local jurisdiction that failed to do this. What we've done here, basically, what's being suggested is to allow the enforcement order to go on immediately that those dates are not met, with a time certain that LCDC is allowed to set for the local government to finish the plans. Failing to do that, then LCDC at that point can withhold the revenues and/or the local government may make a request of the department and the commission to finish the plans and take the cost of that finishing out of the local jurisdiction's state shared revenues. It's a much more palatable system than we think than what the House bill has offered now, and still reaches the same result, which is the deadlines that I think we're all interested in.
With regard to sections 5, 6, and 7, these sections change the existing procedures for appealing amendments to acknowledged plans and regulations. These are some issues that were dealt with last session, and under current law, while most land use decisions are appealed to LUBA, the Land Use Board of Appeals, if the decision concerns the amendment of an acknowledged plan or the amendment of a zoning ordinance, the amendment of a comprehensive plan map, things of that nature, those actions are appealed to LCDC for compliance with the goals or compliance with specific provisions in the comprehensive plan, and at the same time are appealable to LUBA for procedural issues or consistency with the rest of the plan, consistency with other local ordinances, things of that nature. So we have, under current law, a dual appeal system. Now, as more and more plans are becoming acknowledged, it is foreseen that this is where most of the activity will be taking place in land use decisions, are in amendments to plans and in amendments to zoning ordinances. And this could become a real problem for having two sets of briefs and two sets of records and two oral arguments going in two different forums at the same time. Sections 5, 6, and 7 would consolidate these types of appeals in the land use court. It is very similar to a provision that is in House Bill 2295, and that is the House Committee has decided also to consolidate those kinds of appeals within the land use or land development review panel that bill creates. So the essence of that provision, in other words, consolidating all types of appeals into the appellate body, if you will, is similar. The difference here, of course, is that under the land use court, so we go to the land use court rather than the panel.
Sections 8 through 14 actually set up the new system for periodic review, and I'd like to just take you through that quickly. We presented this to the House Committee, and I think there was a lot of interest in it, although we got down to the two issues of whether to have discretionary or mandatory review. This establishes a periodic review system very similar to that the plan amendment system we now have. There are four criteria involved in the review of whether or not a plan has been through sufficient changes to send it into the whole periodic review system. Let me go through those criteria with you. The first one is, it has there been a change of circumstances in the plan that necessitate it to be reviewed again and reviewed against the goals?
What are those criteria?
They're not in here anywhere. They are in the rule that LCDC has been operating under now. We're taking those out and assuming those will be outlined. I didn't see them.
Well, in the printed amendments on page 10.
Section 8?
Yeah.
Section 8.3, is that what you're talking about?
Yes, well, actually section 9.
Oh, I'm sorry, yes. Okay.
Which begins on page 10. Starting on line 22, really, are the
22,
existing circumstances, and those are carried over in a little different procedure.
And we've got a change of circumstances that would indicate that the plan is no longer in compliance. Any of the provisions that were at the time of acknowledgement put on as conditions that the local jurisdiction had to follow through later on. Any state agency program that was required by the legislature in which there needs to be some changes. And of course, whether there's been any new goals, goal amendments, and or rules that must be complied with the jurisdiction. We're suggesting here, basically, that following the plan amendment process, that a jurisdiction at a time set between 2 and 5 years after acknowledgement would be required to review those criteria, make that a public effort, if you will, a proposal, that if any of those apply to the jurisdiction, that they put forth exactly how they're going to deal with dealing with those criteria. In other words, the corrections, put that out in the form of, if you will, a periodic review proposal, and then give 90-day notice to LCDC and all other parties, same as the plan amendment process, for everybody to review what's being proposed. At the end of that 90 days, before the final hearing, if you will, we're suggesting that participation be required by anybody who wants to follow through and has an interest in that periodic review. I think we have 45 days prior to the final action. LCDC and the department are asked to provide their recommendations as to whether or not it meets the four criteria, whether those apply, and how they've handled it. So in all cases, the department has an ability to participate in each and every periodic review, as well as any other interested party, which is one of the major features of this proposal. We're suggesting that everybody be involved and that every jurisdiction go through periodic review. When the final hearing is held, everybody is allowed to participate who has an interest. And anybody who has participated has the ability to go ahead and appeal this on up to the commission. The advantage, as far as we're concerned, is that it keeps the process local, much like the plan amendment process. Forces folks to come down and explain to the local jurisdiction what they feel needs to be done in order to keep the plan in compliance, including the department. But once they have participated or failed to participate, then their remedies follow. If they fail to participate, they have no participation rights on up in an appeal. If they have participated, they're able to take it as far as they'd like to. And it does, as I suggested, force every jurisdiction through the process. Different than, if you will, mandatory review, or for that matter, discretionary review. And let me explain what I think to be the problem there. Once again, you're telling the citizens and the jurisdictions of the state that you're going to have the plan taken away, sent to Salem, and reviewed at that level. We're suggesting that this keeps the process local, gives the perception that everybody has a chance for involvement in this local process, and yet doesn't in any way at all take anybody out of the process and forces everybody to go through it. And we think it's a much healthier system, one which makes a good deal more sense at this time.
Yes, Senator Claude.
Does this add another step? I like what you're saying, but I just want to know whether you have. Are we adding another step? We are adding another.
It adds more steps actually to the process. Right now, in 2 to 5 years, what happens? The jurisdiction would send the plan.
Planners
in,
review it.
Very similar to what's happening in acknowledgement. This would add the extra step of the local government actually doing it, having the hearing, everything local, again, everybody participating at that level. But we think it's a healthy, if you will, a citizen involvement step, if nothing else. And it also gives the local jurisdiction a chance to be able to deal with the whole subject of periodic review at its level first, and then, if necessary, appeal to the commission for further review.
If I might clarify, too, that local step would need to go on under any type of periodic review, because in the local plans, under every local plan that I'm aware of, there is a requirement for a periodic review on a 2 to 5 year schedule. Even if it were simply a commission-oriented, either mandatory or discretionary review, that local process would have to go forth, where the local government does take a look and perhaps makes changes to their plan. If they make changes to the plan, those are plan amendments, and of course you have involvement at the local level. The difference with this proposal is it focuses more attention and emphasis on that local level, and then has the commission involved only upon appeal. And if the department does not feel there are important issues there, or the local government has handled the issues in a proper manner, they don't have to concern themselves with it in terms of appealing it to the commission, and the commission does not need to be involved.
The problem many local jurisdictions faced, and we dealt with it on the plan amendment process last session, as many of you remember, was that local governments were going through and reviewing various things, and then what would happen, people would not participate there, they would wait until it came to the commission level and deal with the problems and or their suggestions at that level, without the local jurisdiction ever having had the benefit of knowing exactly what those problems were that potentially could have been corrected locally. This is the same, this would correct that by suggesting, as Marianne has said, that everything be handled locally first, and that be the requirement.
Sections 16 through 20 essentially just change steps for references that need to be changed primarily because of the changes in the periodic review and post-acknowledgement sections. And so some of them are not even land use sections, but they had references to Orders 197 in them, so they need to be changed. One of the substantive changes is in Section 17 that would clarify that an LCDC enforcement order can not only prohibit or limit the approval of development at the local level, but can also require the approval of development at the local level. And this provision is also found in House Bill 2295 throughout in references to the exceptions from, or excuse me, the enforcement order authority of LCDC.
.1 falls in that same kind of a category as an amendment or a reference. Here's on page 25. Section 22 is the section that prohibits new subdivisions in land with zoned exclusive farm use. Sections 23 through 28 establish a consolidated permit procedure and at the local level and place a timeline on the handling of permits by local government.
Can I interrupt just a minute, please?
Sure, Dick.
That is extremely important. Now, we had a case where we had trying to develop a industrial park. It had to go through the annexation proceeding. It was a partitioning effort, and at the same time we had to make the zone changes, and we had to hold separate hearing procedures that elongated it about twice the time. And almost anyone I've talked to from the local level is very supportive of allowing for those consolidations so they could hold hearings on all three at the same time, where currently they cannot do it. Go ahead.
Is this, these provisions, is there something similar to this in 2295? Or is this
yes.
Not?
Yes.
The timelines are in 2295, but there's no requirement for a consolidated hearing in 2295.
No,
it's the version I have doesn't.
The version I saw had a had this provision.
It does have a control
yeah.
There right, I stand
basically
correct. Mr. Chairman, some of our difficulty is that they've been making, so you know, they made changes and amendments to that bill as late as Friday, and I understand they're making a couple additional ones, so that all we know is what our latest version, but I'm pretty sure that they allow for the consolidation
yeah,
of
I,
all
I
the
it's,
efforts.
I find it.
Senator Ford, do you have a question?
No, I guess that was my question. We'll find out.
The timing process essentially is that the applicant brings in his material, and within 30 days, the local government must tell the applicant whether the application is complete or not. And after the application is complete, the local governmental jurisdiction then has 120 days to take final to make a final determination on that application. The penalty, I guess, for failure to meet the 120 days is that the applicant may seek a mandamus to force the issuance of the force the approval of the application, and that it tends to shift the burden of proof a little bit, if I understand the legal technicality of it. If the jurisdiction has not taken action and the applicant seeks seeks in court to get the approval issued, why then there's a little heavier burden on the jurisdiction to indicate why they shouldn't issue, why the permit should not be issued.
Might clarify here that the intention as defined both in the House bill version and the sure here is to have it only regarding the permits that are within total control of the local jurisdiction. Versus the building permit and septic tank permit, which were outside of the control of the jurisdiction, and or anything necessitating a plan amendment, which goes through a different process. So that would not be subject to the 120-day limit here.
Sections 29 through 33 of the amendments establish some new provisions relating to economic development. These are very similar to, or essentially the same as those in House Bill 2295, as we understand it. These set out some general policy statements regarding economic development and its importance in the land use planning process, and set out certain factors that are of importance in the process, and requiring LCDC or the Commission to implement these. Either in the adoption of new goals or rules or in the application and interpretation of existing goals and rules. These include that plans include certain economic analyses of economic potentials and strengths and deficiencies of the community, that they contain specific policies concerning economic development. They provide at least an adequate supply of suitable sizes and types and locations of industrial and commercial lands. They provide for compatible uses near sites that are zoned for specific industrial and commercial uses. And they provide for a public facilities plan if there are a city or a county within an urban growth boundary having 2,500 or more persons.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Day.
And that's on page 34, lines 9 through 15. And I can tell you that we tried very hard to achieve that during the last session and were unsuccessful. But it's one that I think is extremely important. Now, this matches the House version. I know of no difference. There may be... there may be some editorial that we've proofread it a little better, but basically, out of all that, that is probably one of the more controversial sections in that area, and I just point that out to the rest of you. Go ahead.
Senator Day mentioned this was one of the provisions that I believe was undergoing some amendments yet on Friday in the House committee, and but as I understand it, the language is very similar to that contained here.
The importance, if I may, Mr. Chairman, I just one other, you know, they'll set aside industrial, and Multnomah County is just an excellent.